Welcome to Enriched Menopause, where perimenopausal and menopausal women can learn what's going on with their bodies and how to thrive during this stage and beyond. You are not crazy and you are not alone. I'm Dr. Jessica Rich. Let's do this together. Hello, and welcome back to Enriched Menopause. Today, we're going to talk about another part of our bodies affected by our hormones and perimenopause and menopause. I've said it so many times before that basically every part of our body is affected by this. And today's guest, I'm really excited to talk with. It's been a long time trying to make this work with our schedules. I have Dr. Rita Dargham. She's a dentist. She's got decades of experience in family and cosmetic dentistry and a special interest in women's dentistry as well. So welcome, Dr. Dargham.
Thank you, Jessica. It's a pleasure to be here. And yes, I agree. It's been quite some time trying to get this going, and I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got interested in dentistry.
Well, I've been practicing now for over 20 years. It's hard to believe. Ever since I can remember being asked what I wanted to do when I grew up, I knew I wanted to be a doctor. What that meant at the time, I don't know. I didn't know. But as my schooling continued and went on, I got closer to liking the combination of art and science. And that was the perfect, you know, guide toward dentistry. Then a family mentor basically forced me to shadow him in his office. Mm-hmm. And once that happened, I fell in love with it. And here we are.
And I know you focus on all people's dental health, but today, of course, yes, with this podcast, we're going to focus on women in perimenopause and menopause. So tell me, what are some of the most common issues you see in that stage?
In general, as we reach older age, dental health and hygiene becomes a major concern. The dentist is often the first person to appreciate numerous changes experienced during this period. So we start to see changes affecting not only the teeth, but our gums. So the teeth and the gums are susceptible to hormonal changes, decreasing the ability for them to fight off minor infections or maintain a healthy balance between useful and harmful bacteria. Periodontal health is affected in up to 60% of women, most severely. We also have dry mouth syndromes, burning mouth syndrome, what we call pain or painful mouth is also something that we see quite fairly in women that are reaching the ages of sometime between 40 and 60 years. The endocrine alteration that happens when we reach menopausal periods induce bone resorption throughout the body. And that appears to also affect the jawline and the jawbone that keeps our teeth in place. So those are just some of the conditions that we start to see during that period of time.
I know a lot of people don't think of it this way, but I always hear, you know, your dental health is sort of like a measure of your overall health. And of course, if we're absorbing bone more, which is what's giving more of that osteoporosis to women postmenopausally, it's going to affect your teeth, because of course, what's happening in your teeth is mostly bone. Of course, there's other things going on there too, but that makes sense. So let's tackle some of these issues. So you mentioned gum disease, infection.
Yes,
around there. So let's talk about gum disease.
So there are certain symptoms that periodontal disease poses that might be very fairly and commonly felt and seen either by the patient or by the dentist. And some of these include, but are not limited to, reddish or purple gums, bleeding, soreness, bad breath, which is also known as halitosis. We may start to feel or taste unpleasantly in the mouth, an unpleasant taste. We may have some pain during chewing. We may start to notice some gum recession, which means gums that pull away from your teeth, exposing a little bit of the root right at the gum line, which may look a little bit yellower than the rest of your tooth. It may feel very, very sensitive. And these root surfaces that are exposed tend to be a little bit more at risk for caries or cavities. We call them root surface caries. we start to see more of our teeth feeling loose. The number one cause of tooth loss today is periodontal disease or gum disease. We may start to see a change in the way that our teeth fit together. As we age, we start to notice that our jawline and the arch where our teeth lay starts to look a little bit more narrow. We don't have as broad a smile as we did when we were 20 years old. And so in effect, we may start to see a little bit more crowding in the lower part of our jaw at the front of our teeth. We may start to see that relapse or that going back to minor crowding that we used to have before we had orthodontics or braces when we were young. A dry mouth is very, very common. And that may be due to just the fact that we are losing that hormonal balance. It may be due to medications, mouth breathing at night. And so when we start to feel more of that dryness, as we do in other parts of our body during that menopausal period, that also increases our risk for decay or cavities. So that's something that we need to tackle, work with, and try to balance as we navigate through these waters.
How do we deal with that dry mouth? Because I do hear people complaining about that all the time, the dry mouth. And if it's leading to more than just dry mouth, if it's leading to cavities and decay and all of these other things that can be dangerous, how do you address that?
First and foremost, what we typically recommend is that women or people in general drink as much water as possible. Water is one of our best forces of defense. So we need to continue drinking lots of water. There's also saliva substitutes, and they come in the form of sprays, in the form of rinses, in the form of even chewing gum. Xylitol is a type of chewing gum that's relatively safe in the sense that it doesn't have sugar. So stimulating the mouth and the salivary glands with foods such as the xylitol, foods that may stimulate just like a perk in our taste buds, like something a little bit spicy, something a little bit more citrusy, those tend to basically wake those glands up. And as they wake up and constantly are stimulated, the mouth will form more saliva. One study shows that it's actually the imbalance in progesterone that may be the cause of the change in salivary flow. So that's something to consider when a woman is thinking about using hormonal replacement therapy. Studies are still, you know, not confirmed, but there is suspicion that progesterone may be the leading cause of hormonally related reduction in salivary flow.
That's really interesting because, of course, we see a lot of changes for women's dental health during pregnancy as well. And there's a lot of fluctuations in the progesterone levels then, too. So I'm curious to see how that research pans out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A few other causes or things to consider in keeping the mouth as healthy as possible is proper oral hygiene. Ideal oral hygiene is extremely important. The reduction or elimination in smoking is very, very important. Smoking alone reduces our mouth's ability, our mucosal ability or soft tissue ability to heal because it diminishes the oxygen flow and oxygenation of the mouth. So when you don't have that regular flow of oxygen and circulation, gum disease worsens. And so sometimes in smokers, you may start to see their gums looking a little bit more red or even purplish. So that's very important too, to consider.
Right. And of course, smoking, I've said it before, it's not really good for any part of your body.
Absolutely not.
Think about the lungs and maybe they think about yellowing of the teeth, but it's also causing that damage to your gum lines as well. So definitely no smoking. What else to maintain good oral health?
The most basic of all is maintaining your proper oral hygiene at home. That means brushing with a soft manual or electric brush, depending on what your manual dexterity allows for and does best with, twice a day at the very least. We like to recommend a 2-minute brushing session because it takes that long to actually navigate all the nooks and crannies of our mouth with a fluoridated toothpaste. A fluoridated toothpaste, fluoride is a mineral that we have in our tap water that we also produce. And fluoride is the mineral that helps keep our teeth mineralized. It reduces sensitivity and it reduces the risk of decay. So it's extremely important to incorporate fluoride, whether it be in your toothpaste or in a mouth rinse on a regular basis, especially if you're not drinking our city water, because that bottled water does not have fluoride in it, FYI, in case anyone has ever wondered. So the 2-minute brushing is very important. That should be followed by flossing. Many of us hate the fact that we have to stick a string between our teeth and actually make that happen. But flossing is a physical and mechanical method that allows whatever is left over between our teeth to come out. And basically what we're trying to remove is not only food particles that get stuck, but plaque. Plaque is basically a film of bacteria. If we put a little piece of plaque under a microscope, we'll actually see germs moving around. So imagine that being kept in your mouth when you don't properly brush and floss your mouth.
Yeah, I don't think flossing wants to picture that.
No. But maybe picturing it will help us to determine how important it is to actually do that. So flossing is absolutely an imperative step in our oral hygiene on a daily basis. And you don't have to do it every time you eat or every time you brush. At least one time a day before going to bed is recommended. Many patients feel comfortable with a water pick. A water pick is nice. You also have to be careful in how much pressure you use, because people that do have periodontal disease, soft or detached gums, when you use high-pressured water picks, you can actually push bacteria back down into the deeper levels, which you don't want. Mm-hmm. So if I was asked by a patient what I prefer, I would prefer flossing over a water pick. And then using an antibacterial mouth rinse is always helpful. It's not absolutely necessary, but for those patients that do suffer from periodontal disease, especially the more advanced forms, can definitely benefit from an antiviral or antibacterial mouth rinse.
I have basic question for you, because
yes,
I was always kind of doing the brushing, then the flossing, the rinsing, maybe either before or after. But recently a hygienist told me I should floss, then brush, then rinse. But I don't know. What's the right order for this?
You know, there is no formula that is perfectly adhered to. I truly believe it's just when people ask me what type of brush they should use, I really believe it's whatever works best for you. Now, when you're flossing first, I do like that because you are removing particles and plaque between your teeth that your brush is not going to get to. So if you prime the mouth with flossing first, you're basically then going over the exposed surfaces when you are brushing. So I personally like to floss first and then brush my teeth. So I'm not in disagreement with that. However, if you're brushing and then feel you want to floss after, do it. Do it the way that works for you. I find the more rules you put into place and the more gadgets you're using, the less compliant a patient will be. So
as long as you're doing it, then that's okay.
That's right. As long as you're doing it, that works best. If you're asking me my preference, I would prefer to floss and then brush. So I hope that helps.
Floss and brush and then rinse somewhere in there. Just the three steps and not necessarily
yes.
the time.
And actually, I forgot one very important one that many people don't do, and that's scraping or brushing your tongue. Mm. The tongue, you have to picture it being almost like a shag rug. And some tongues are more obvious in appearance to that effect than others. Our tongues have minor, very, 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 very small little projections that are like the hairs on a rug. And so when we eat, drink, smoke, especially foods and drinks that are colored, all that tends to cling and to get stuck in those little hairs on the tongue. So scraping the tongue is as important as brushing your teeth, because when we don't, we allow all of that plaque and bacteria and food to be left behind, which contributes also to what we call a discolored hairy tongue. Some people's tongue looks darker than others, and it also contributes to bad breath. So definitely scrape your tongue. Ask your dentist for a wonderful tongue scraper. I don't leave my home without it. I don't leave my bathroom without using it after I brush and floss, when you see what comes out on that, you will never again not use it. So scraping the tongue is very important. I prefer that over brushing the tongue, because when you brush the tongue, you tend to basically spread all this across the surface and you're not truly removing it. So I prefer to scrape it.
Okay. I'm going to have to train my kids now because I've got them brushing the tongues.
Yes. Yes. Please do. So then that's what you do at home with your dentist. Very important to maintain at least a biannual periodic dental examination that involves physical examination by your dentist, a set of x-rays, and a hygiene appointment. The hygiene appointment removes what we have not been able to at home. So when plaque is built on our teeth and our gums, it takes 24 hours for that plaque, which is a film, basically a film of bacteria, it's mushy, for that to turn into tartar. Tartar is harder, it's more calcified, and it's also a bed of bacteria that's just basically burnished onto our teeth. We cannot remove that with a toothbrush or even flossing. So maintaining a healthy maintenance program every 6 months with your favorite hygienist will allow her to remove all of this tartar before it starts to break down the supporting structures that are keeping your teeth in place. And those supporting structures are bone and soft tissue, like gums and ligaments and all kinds of pink material that you see in your mouth that keeps your teeth in your head, basically. Mm-hmm. So when all of this bacteria and tartar is left behind for long periods of time, it basically is acting to reduce, to break down, and to disassemble the supporting structures that keep our teeth in place.
Now, you had mentioned with the gum disease, things like, you know, redness, puffiness, recession of the gums. So I do notice that with a lot of women, especially as we're getting into perimenopause and menopause, more of that sort of gum recession and exposure of the lower parts or sometimes even the root of the tooth. What do we do about that?
We can do various number of things, depending on the severity and what the symptoms are posing to the patient. We can do as little as absolutely nothing to a graft, a tissue graft. So when there is gum recession, the root surfaces that are exposed, as I mentioned earlier, tend to form higher risks for decay and can also be more sensitive to the patient, sensitive to cold, to sweets, to brushing, even to air sometimes as people are speaking and functioning. So there are fluoridated toothpaste that are higher in the amount of fluoride that are only dispersed by prescription. And there's a line of those products that's very, very good. It's called Prevident. There's another line that's called Fluoridex. Those are toothpaste that we can use on a regular basis or even alternate with over-the-counter anti-sensitivity toothpaste such as Pronamel or Sensodyne. Those tend to, over time, help reduce sensitivity. So that's something that we can do just from a symptomatic standpoint when the recession is still very early and it's not enough to do anything about. Just as a palliative approach, that's something that you can do. Keep the plaque off of those root surfaces. Plaque is acidic. So a plaque can also increase the risk of sensitivity. Keeping the tooth surfaces clean, using anti-sensitivity toothpaste, that's a very, very introductory level palliative step that you can take. As the recession worsens and they become unsightly or even more sensitive, we can use restorative dentistry such as tooth-colored resins or composites to basically wallpaper or fill in those gaps. We layer it onto those two surfaces, we shape and polish it, and it looks, once we're done, like if nothing happened to the tooth. So it basically insulates the surface, reducing sensitivity, and it helps reduce the risk of decay if that area is kept clean. It doesn't mitigate the fact that you have to keep it clean. In more advanced cases, we can also consider the fact that tissue grafting, gum grafting, is also very helpful to cover those advanced receding areas and to help make them look a little bit better. So you can go from doing absolutely nothing to surgery. on how to treat those.
So it's all depending on how you're feeling and where you're at sort of in that stage.
That's right. And that's something that could be assessed during these 6-month examinations. I have many patients whose gum receding lesions are early to moderate, and we've been watching them for, you know, years, months. And when it's coming time to do something about it, we're there and we're along with the patient, guiding them and helping them determine when it's time to actually act. So that's, they appreciate that. It helps them along this journey. And it's a partner. It's a partner with which you can collaborate on your oral health. So form a good relationship with a trusting dentist that you can ask questions to, feel yourself with, and that person will help guide you along the way.
I think that's so important in so many parts of our health to establish that relationship as best you can when things are going well and you're doing the routine maintenance, so that when things do come up, you've got somebody that you trust and who knows you well enough to help guide you through that.
One thing I could recommend or not recommend is that a person not jump from one provider, dentist, or even physician to another, either looking for an answer they're wanting to hear or shopping for a budget that they can feel comfortable with. Because you have to build consistency. You have to build trust. You have to build a relationship with someone that knows you, as you said, and knows your history and your habits, your lifestyle, and someone that can provide you with recommendations and advice that you feel comfortable listening to. And you can only do that with a trusting, consistent relationship that you've fostered over time.
Definitely. That's not to say never get a second opinion, or that if you have a
problem
with your provider,
definitely not
somebody new, but building that relationship is so important.
Absolutely.
Well, Rita, you've given us so many great tips. Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with?
I would just like to let everyone know that going to the dentist is not a scary experience. It doesn't need to be. So as we just mentioned, find someone that you are comfortable with. There's so many ways to find comfort in a dental office. Use your senses. Use something that you can listen to while you're there. Use a warm blanket. Go with the idea that you're going to be improving your oral health, not torturing yourself. Listen to music, a podcast, something that makes you comfortable while you're in the office. And as I said, be open. Tell someone, tell your dentist, your hygienist, even the assistant, the supporting staff that's there to help you. Be honest with them. Be open. The more amenable you are to expressing your concerns and your fears, the more likely the office is to help you feel more comfortable. So without that, none of this relationship will exist. So just find someone you're happy with. Be proud of your smile. It's a part of who you are. Make sure that it feels good, it smells good, it functions well, and just do what you can to take care of it, because it's as connected to the rest of your body as you know, and if not more than you think.
So important. Thank you so much, Dr. Rita. If someone is looking for a dentist just like you, where can people find you?
We are located in Coconut Grove in Miami. Our website for more information is www.grove-smiles.com, grovesmiles.com. I can also be found on Instagram at Dr. Rita the Smile Designer. That's my personal / business page on Instagram. And my email address is ritadargum@gmail.com. So you can feel free to use any of those methods to contact me.
We'll link to all of those in the show notes. Thank you again. It's been such a pleasure talking with you, Rita.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, and share with someone in your life who may benefit from this too. Remember that while I am a doctor, this podcast does not constitute medical advice and is for informational purposes only. Talk with your doctor about what may apply to you and your health. We'll see you on the next episode of Enriched Menopause.